We talk about self-love all the time, but we don't recognize that in order to actually have time for self-love and self-care, you need to make time for yourself. And in order to do that, you do have to put yourself before other people. And so people can really get on board with a wafty idea of self-love. But I'm like, boundaries are the practical side of self-love. How do you have time for self-love and self-care when you're taking care of everyone else first?
Welcome to Doing It with me, Hannah Witten, where we talk all things sex, relationships, dating, and our bodies. Hi, welcome back to Doing It. Today's guest is the brilliant Michelle Ellman, who is a life coach, body positive activist, and author. She recently announced that her second book, The Joy of Being Selfish, How to Set Boundaries and Why We Need Them, will be coming out in February next year, and I just had to talk with her all about it. In recent years, Michelle has become more open online with talking about her experiences dating, and she always has such great wisdom to offer. In this episode, we talk about what Michelle calls empowered dating, how it changed the way she felt about dating and felt about herself, and helped her get over the fear of ending up alone. We chat about all sorts, from the hierarchical notion that meeting a partner IRL is better than meeting them through apps, the scam that is virginity, our thoughts on the TV show Normal People, and we go on a bit of a tangent about neuro-linguistic programming and pickup artists. And of course, we tackle boundaries, how you can set boundaries casually. It doesn't have to be this big thing. Figuring out your boundaries, disagreements in relationships about boundaries, and Michelle's experience with someone she was seeing who wouldn't commit to a time to hang out, but she set a boundary and he was round hers at 3 p.m. Efficient. I love it. As usual, you can find more info and links to everything we talked about in this episode in the show notes over at doingitpodcast.co.uk. And please let us know what you think over on our Twitter or Instagram at Doing It Podcast. And without further ado, here's my chat with Michelle Ellman. Hello, Michelle. Welcome. I am so excited to chat with you today about dating and boundaries. All of that good stuff.
I'm so excited to be on your podcast. It's such an honor.
Ah, this is going to be great. I thought we could start with just like a bit of background. Like, tell us a bit about you and your dating journey.
Okay, so I am single. I've been single for, oh God, I didn't even know, 6 years. I actually feel like it's quite similar to your dating journey.
Except I'm single for 6 years.
I knew that was creepy, but I do follow you, so I did know that. But like, I'm just a few years behind you. So I'm going through the, I was a late bloomer. I started dating when I was 18. Well, I didn't even start dating. I had my first kiss at 18. I lost my virginity, for lack of a better word, at 16. No, 18. 18. It was the same week. So it was Freshers Week. And then I did the whole dating, but not really dating, because at the time, actually before dating apps, I don't think I would have ever even called it dates or dating. It was just like meeting guys in clubs and kissing and then swapping numbers. And I did that whole thing, got my first boyfriend at 21. And and then like I had a few things, but then I've been single for 6 years. And for the first 3 years of that, it was a very conscious choice. I recognized that I was dating a lot of toxic people. And I knew that there were like a number of things I needed to work on within myself. And I had just been diagnosed with PTSD. So I kind of needed all my own time and energy. And I just graduated. So I was like, I just need to sort my life out and figure out what I want before I start like introducing a new person into my life. So I consciously decided to be single for about 3 years. And then after 3 years, I started getting interested in dating and was like dating a little bit, but not really taking it seriously. And to be honest, it only really changed when two of my friends who had been in long-term relationships, one was in like a 7-year relationship and one was in a 5-year relationship. They both broke up in pretty much the same month.
Always happens in waves.
Yeah, exactly. And like, I don't know about you, but I went through a long spell, especially post-uni, where I was the only single friend in my friendship group at 21. And I was like, how? Like, how, we're still young. How am I the only single person? But those relationships eventually come to an end, or the majority of them. Obviously, some people last through school and uni and all of that.
Yeah, there's always one. I swear everyone knows one couple from school who are still together.
Yeah, and it's usually just one, though. It's not the majority. It's just one couple. But so then they basically were newly single and living their ultimate single life.
Love it.
Immediately. So like it was, well, so for one of them, it was immediately. One of them, it was like 2 months of crying, and we both happened to be on the same photo shoot. She turned up with the biggest smile on her face. And I was like, I spoke to you yesterday. You were crying. What's changed? And she was like, I'm going to start a black book. And I was like, sorry, what? I was like, I spoke to you 24 hours ago. And basically, they both started living their like ultimate life. And she was like sliding into people's DMs, which I thought wasn't a real thing unless you're a celebrity. And I was like, whose DMs are you sliding into? And she was like, I'm sliding into like primary school, like guys from primary school who I used to have a crush on. And I was like, that is not a thing at all. And so basically we left the photo shoot, and I don't know why, but I remember it was a Tuesday, and that weekend was Easter weekend. And I forgot it was Easter weekend, being the freelancer that I am, completely forgot that I had two bank holidays. And every night from Tuesday until the Friday was, I'd realized, like, I wasn't going to sleep because I kept thinking about, if I could slide into someone's DMs, who would I slide into? And I'm not a person who like lingers. Like when something's over, I'm like, delete your number, delete our messages, don't think about you ever again. So
I'm such a lingerer.
No, so like me thinking about a guy at 2 o'clock in the morning who I hadn't spoken to in 2 years was so weird to me, to the point where like, so I wake up, realize it's a bank holiday, call my friend. I'm like, you're so annoying. I keep staying up till like 2 a.m. just thinking about this guy from 2 years ago. And I'm like, this is not me. What are you doing to me? And she was like, guess where I am? And I was like, where? And she was like, Africa. And like both of these friends had just decided to pick up and go to Africa. And I like hung up the phone and just had this moment of like, I've been single for so long. They are newly single and they're living their like ultimate single life. And I'm like, I need to get on it a bit. Like I need to actually put some welly into this. And so basically they were like, if you don't DM someone in the next hour, we're going to do it for you, because they have my password on Instagram. So I was like,
what an ultimatum.
I know. And I was like, there's this one guy from 2 years ago. And so I DM'd him, and at like 3 o'clock, by 9 o'clock, he was in my apartment. And like, I had not spoken to him in 9 years. And that, like, that story, that like time in my life, I've actually never spoken about it on my page because it's not really on brand for me. But but that was what kickstarted this year of like actively dating multiple people. Like what I now call empowered dating, where it was the first
time. I was going to ask about that. What is empowered dating?
For me, it's ultimately just dating and not feeling bad about yourself. Because for me, dating meant like questioning my beauty, questioning my worth, questioning if I'm lovable, questioning if I'm ever going to find someone. And I just threw out the idea. It comes with a lot of things in my head, and it's very hard to explain to another person because like empowered dating is such a clear image in my head, but it's also a concept I completely made up. So, but it's like, I date without like a focusing on results. I date to enjoy the time I'm actually on the date with the person I'm with, and I can just enjoy, even if there's no second date, like I can enjoy the time I'm spending with a person in the same way that like I spend time with strangers all the time, and I don't spend the entire time going, well, if I don't see you again, then why am I having a nice conversation with you? That's just a waste of time. But we do that with dating, and it makes no sense. And I started enjoying dating, and last year maybe went on like dated maybe 30 people. Like it was a lot. And some weeks were like 3 dates with 3 different guys. But it just challenged me in so many different ways. Like, and
How did you schedule that all in? That's the main challenge that I'm
honestly
thinking about.
I like before that had to go to all my friends and was like, I'm doing this thing, I'm going to be a shit friend, I might not see you for 6 months. I'm reprioritizing my life and I just want to throw like all my time and energy into dating. So genuinely, for some of my best friends, I didn't see them for like 6 months. Like I would call them and things like that.
Communication though, I'm just like, this is what's happening.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going in this new direction. I love you.
But also, I was like, you're going to have some great stories, though. It was so many amazing stories.
Like, it'll be worth it because when we do hang out, I will have anecdotes.
Exactly. So it was hard scheduling it in, but it was also like, being able to communicate with these people. And the nicest thing was like none of it ended badly. I had got so used to, especially when you date men, like got so used to the fact that like when you reject someone or it ends, it leads in you being insulted. And like for the first time I was like ending things and having no worries about it. Weirdly, before this phase, I like my biggest issue around dating was I never wanted to go on a date with someone because I didn't know how to tell them I wasn't interested after a date, which is such a basic communication thing. And I'm like, how did I struggle with this? This is not that hard.
I think when I was dating, I did so much of that via text.
Yeah.
But there was one person who I remember just being like, I actually really like this person. I don't want to like let them down by text. But because we weren't like meeting up, it was like over the phone. And I remember being so anxious, being like, I like you, but this isn't going anywhere. And I think we should call it a day. But he was just like, yeah, that's totally fine. Like, been really lovely hanging out with you.
But, and then you get it and you're so shocked.
Yeah.
And, like, I remember because I was going into a meeting with, like, it was like my TEDx family. And I sent it on the tube because I was so scared. And, like, I do tend to do it over text because I'm, like, worried in, like, if it's not too many dates. Like, I think with that guy, I'd been, like, 3 dates. Then I think you can do it over text.
This guy, I think I've been dating for, like, 2 or 3 months.
Yeah, then it needs to be like at least over the phone.
A bit more.
But like I sent that text on the tube knowing I didn't have signal because I was so scared about like what he was going to say. And I was
I like that though because then you're like, well, for this rest of this tube journey, I can't think about it.
Yeah.
I can't check my phone because nothing's coming in.
And then I thought, well, I'm going to get off the tube, go to the meeting and then I'll come back and I'll see what it is. But he had already replied by the time I got to the meeting and it was the nicest. Like I remember there was like a sentence in it which was like your because I said something about like I want to focus on like my career, which wasn't like the truth, but I couldn't really tell someone like, oh, I'm finding our conversation boring. So I said like, oh, I should probably focus on my work at the moment. And he was like, your work's really important. So I completely understand you wanting to do that. You're doing so many amazing things and changing the world. And just like, I was like, wow, you're literally complimenting me in a really like big way in our like ending it conversation.
Yeah.
And I think for me, that was the biggest sign that like the quality of men I was dating had completely shifted and that the break in dating and the consciously single period was so needed because like all the guys I dated last year, I would speak positively about and had a really nice time for the length of time we dated, whether it lasted or not.
Yeah. So how did you find these quality men? And I guess another thing that always comes to mind for me is that people have, or like us as a culture, we have this huge fear of like ending up alone, which can often be why we don't date quality people. We like lower our standards a bit. So like, how do you find the quality? And then also, how do we get over this fear of ending up alone?
So I think people are really snobby about where you meet. So every date apart from one was on a dating app. Like there is not a specific, if you meet at the bus stop, doesn't mean they're going to be higher quality. If like, because especially in our generation, I have a lot of friends who are single and going, I wish we could go back to the days where we met in a club. Like it was so much easier. The one guy, I did have one bad experience where a guy stood me up. But that was the only guy I met off a dating app. And that was a guy I met in a club. And so I used to say to my friends, see, I told you it's not higher quality just because you're meeting in person. And this like, glorification of meeting in person as being better and meaning they're higher quality. It doesn't mean anything.
It's just a bit more romanticized, I guess, because it doesn't involve technology.
You know why? Because I think we always want that story to go with our relationship. We always want that like good how we met story, and like I think it's always cool. Like, oh, how are you gonna tell your kids that I met on a dating app? Oh, how unromantic. And I'm like, well, does it have to be romantic? And that's coming from a person whose parents met on an airplane. My mum was an air hostess, and they have the most romantic story, like, possible.
That's the ultimate.
And, like, I was like, can't compete, might as well not try. Dating app it is for me. but I think the quality of men changed when I accepted that I wasn't scared of being alone. I think that the last relationship I was actually in was actually a huge life lesson for me, that when we ended, all I felt was relief, because, and then I had slight regret about the amount of time and energy I put into that relationship. Just because I knew it was never going to last from the beginning. And if I was honest with myself at that time, I got into that relationship because I wanted a boyfriend, not that person, but a boyfriend. It could have been any human. He could have been interchangeable with any other person, and it would have been fine.
We trick ourselves into thinking that we're compatible with someone, or thinking that someone is good for us. Like, I remember I dated someone, like, maybe one of the most attractive people I have ever met. Like, I actually was floored by his beauty when I first met him. And we dated for a while, but it was acknowledged, like, really early on in us dating that he never wanted children.
Yeah.
And I do want children. And so even though it was just like, oh, you're really hot and really lovely and this is really fun, that was established really early on. And we did date for a while after that, but there was clearly this understanding of like, this isn't going anywhere. We're just going to like enjoy time with each other for now.
But you know what I think that is? I think that it's the fact that anytime I talk about these things, and I talk about like, you, the person you are dating has to match your values a lot. And I say that in terms of life coaching, like your values, what do you value in your love life? Is it appreciation? Is it sex? Is it love? Is it excitement? Is it security or safety? If your values aren't being met, then that's not a person you should be with. And then they'll go, oh, but I love them. And I'm like, but love is not enough. I don't know how we were sold this message that like love can overcompensate for the fact that he doesn't want children. So you have two options there. Either you're going to be resentful because you never had something that you want in your life, or he's going to resent the kids because he had kids he didn't want. Like, that's not going to end up very well.
Yeah.
But like, we do it because of this fear of being single, and we do it because like we worry, what if, and it's all of these negative but honestly quite predictable thoughts, like, what if I'm never going to find someone like him? What if, like, we all do it, but none of it is true. And you don't know what's going to happen in your future, but all I know was I didn't want to spend my time regretting how much time and energy I'd put into someone else. And that's how I felt after my last relationship, was I was like, how would my life be different if that time and energy I put into a relationship that was broken before it even began, if I had put that time and energy into myself? And it's why I don't regret like this single period. I don't spend time thinking about when it's going to end. I do want a relationship now, and that's pretty much been changed since the pandemic.
I was going to ask, actually, like, how has COVID impacted like your dating life, or like what you've heard from other people as well?
So I was dating someone right before we went into a pandemic, and then we became long distance as a result. And then I think it genuinely changed my mindset around I want a relationship now, whereas like before I was like open to a relationship, but it wasn't like something I was putting as a priority. And I think the difference is that like, I don't know why, in the last 6 months, I've got really maternal, and I've got really, like, I'm really liking being a homebody. And I'm like, look, mm-hmm. I sometimes just want to stay at home and watch a movie with someone. I don't want to have to go out to see someone every time. And I kind of am craving that period in a relationship where you don't have to go on a date to spend time with each other.
Yeah. Oh my God, this is so weird, because I was exactly like that around the 6 year mark of being single. I was just like, oh, actually, sure, just having a person would be really nice.
Yeah. But also, like, I don't know about you, but I like, towards the end of your 6 year mark, but there have been moments in the last year where I have had huge career accomplishments, and then I've come home, because I live by myself, I can't come home to an empty house. And I must say, like, it's I have friends who are my biggest cheerleaders, and it's like, it's great, but like, I would also just like a member of my team, like a teammate, to be like in, like, know every detail of the journey and have been home to be like, congratulations, today must have felt so amazing. And like, I am a very self-sufficient, independent person, but I also don't think it's wrong that I'm craving that and wanting that. And so that's why my priorities are changing.
No, nothing wrong with that at all. You mentioned about values, and actually it kind of like ties into the boundary conversation and what somebody on Instagram asked, which is, when do you chat about this? Not wanting to scare people off, but also not wanting to waste time, the whole wasting time thing coming up again.
I think it comes in stages, right? So like, the first few dates, you're not checking whether the guy wants to have kids, but I mean, it does naturally come up. Like,
it does,
if
sometimes,
you're walking down the street and like, there's a baby in a crib, and like, your eyes go to it, which mine naturally do, because I'm quite, even like from an early age, I've always been quite maternal. And like, you just say something like, oh, that's so cute, and the guy's like, what? And hasn't even noticed that there's like a baby. Like, it's things like that, which you don't have to have an overt conversation about it, but that does give a clue. But it's also the fact that before you get to that point, there are other red flags that are like, that are more important, I think. Like, are they a decent human? Are they like, whatever your criteria are. So for me, it would be the fact that like, are they emotionally intelligent? Are they ambitious? Those are my mm-hmm. probably top two criteria for someone I want to date. Can they communicate well? Those, like, I would be looking for that in the first three things, and that doesn't require any actual conversation with them being like, hey, are you ambitious? Because you can tell in their answer. Like, I always say, ask the why questions. So when someone tells you about their job, rather than saying, what do you do? Like, why do you love it? Why do you do that? And that will give you a lot of information about the person. So you, but I think, again, like, if I was dating like this a few years ago, it sucks the fun out of it, I must say. Like, sitting there feeling like you're going through a checklist of like, do you meet all my criteria? Like,
yeah.
It's more so that you're active. How I do it now is I'm actively listening on a date, and I'm listening to what they're telling me. And I believe that what they're telling me is so important and tells you way more than like everything you need to know. And it comes across in like, small comments that they make. Like, when I see a dating app that says I'm a bit of a dick, but, and I'm like, you've literally told me who you are already. Like, or like, and people write that on their profiles, and I'm like, do you know what you're doing? Like, saying that, I also I got into a relationship with a guy who once said, like, will you be my girlfriend, but just to let you know, I'm a bit of an asshole, and I still said yes. So like, I think that's why, like,
maybe you're just like, well, at least they're being honest.
Genuinely, that's word for word what I said. I was like, I said to my friends, at least he's self-aware. You know what's worse than an asshole who's self-aware? Someone who doesn't know they're being an asshole. No, wrong, Michelle. Like, learn from it. Like, not, but I mean, I was 18. Like, I feel like at that age, you make allowances and you make excuses for all kinds of behavior just because you simply want to be loved and you want to like have those milestone experiences. And because I had the mentality, I was already like behind on the, like, I was always already behind all my friends. I felt like I had catching up to do and wanted those experiences. Whereas like now, I mean, I don't know about you, but like the moment I lost my, again, I hate the word virginity, but like the moment I had
sexual debut,
the moment I had my sexual debut, I literally went like, why is this such a like worth defining thing? Because like the fact that like there are actually women out there who haven't had sex, who believe that they aren't good enough because they haven't had sex, is mind boggling for someone who has actually had sex. Whereas like before you've had sex, you're just like, no, I fully buy it. I fully believe it. And then you have sex and you're like, sorry, what? That was meant to define my worth?
Yeah, you're like, I am still the same and I'm still worth a bucket ton of love.
Yeah, exactly. And like nothing's really changed, but it's like, I think it's the movies. I'm going to blame it on the media. The media paints it as this like life-altering, life-changing
moment. Oh, actually, I wanted to ask you about the media because I've been listening to your podcast and you do this segment where you take things that have happened on TV and kind of like dissect it in terms of like poor communication and like how to do it better. And so I was wondering if you've got any favorite, well, ones that you love and also ones that you hate, like media tropes around dating.
Like pretty much, I'm sorry, there is actually no good rom-com that I found that is actually...
Really? I'm trying to think.
I can't think of a single one that actually talks about being single as if it could be an active choice. And I think that leads into society where
we're... There was that How to Be Single movie a few years ago.
Like, I mean, how many of those people in that movie ended up not being single by the end of the movie? Like,
at least one of them was single at the end.
Yeah.
She went hiking to the Grand Canyon because that was what she wanted to do.
But it's just, it's all, I don't know. I always feel like there's such a negative portrayal around all romantic things. And then on the flip side, then it's always painted as if it's meant to be supposedly really easy. And like the other trope is that like, if you have to work that hard, then it doesn't work and you should find someone else. Sorry, every relationship, friendship, platonic, work relationship requires work. And that's just communication. And
I think there's this balance with that because then you get people who are like stay in really awful relationships because they've internalized the idea that it's meant to be really difficult and really hard. So there is like this balance that you have to strike of like, it, you know, it takes effort.
Yeah.
But it's not going to be grueling. Like, it shouldn't be painful.
Exactly. And also that, like, you are two humans changing. So just because you go through, like, a difficult period, like, in a year in or what and not, doesn't mean that's going to be the next 6 years. And if it is the next 6 years, then you probably should start considering that it's not the fact that you're in different life stages. It's more so that you are people that don't gel well together. And I definitely agree that there's balance. But I feel like... Oh, you know what? I genuinely can't think of a good example off the top of my head. I think the show This Is Us is quite good about showing human conversations, like less so about like relationshipy. Well, it's just about how we talk to each other. It's quite good at showing how we should talk to each other and how messy communication can get. But the worst one that comes to mind is probably Normal People. Because I mean the whole premise of that,
communicating,
but also just like it's that, you know how when you have a conversation in your own head and you're like, oh, I wish I should have said that, that is the whole show. The whole show is I wish you would have said something that you did not say.
And also the fact that the two of them remember the same event differently because in their head they thought they said something which they didn't, and it's both of them just like misinterpreting each other the entire time and then having a really amazing sexual connection that has taken no effort whatsoever. I'm just like, nah, this is not how it goes.
Although isn't it in Normal People, it's the first time I saw them have a conversation about a condom.
So that
was good. But I didn't appreciate a lot of the sexual stuff in Normal People, because I just think like it painted the BDSM community badly, it painted communication bad, like, and I just don't know whether I buy, and maybe this is from my own experiences, but I don't buy it that you can have that great like a sexual connection without at least having like some sort of emotional connection, where like, not emotional connection, but like
talking about sex,
but like communication, I guess that's a better word, like, because like I've, do you know what I mean, where like you have some sort of spark, even just in communication, even if you don't want them romantically, that's what leads to like great chemistry having sex. But without that, I didn't like the critique that like if they communicated there would have been no storyline, because I'm like, that's every TV show. But I also was like, oh, this is a little, I enjoyed it as a show. I like really enjoyed it. I watched all of it, watched it pretty quickly. But I think like for me, that's probably the worst, because it's, I thought it was actually quite accurate how people communicate. And what you were saying around the fact that like people remember things differently, doesn't that happen in romantic relationships all the time?
Yeah. That's the important like thing with normal people, is that whilst we're criticizing the communication in it, it's actually really reflective of how we how we do communication, which is not great.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why when people are like, and that whole segment on my podcast was born out of the fact that people are like, you're so big on communication, and then you watch these shows with awful communication, and I'm like, yes, because you do realize that's how the rest of the world communicates. And when I first started learning boundaries with my life coach, I'd be like, I can't say that, that's not normal. And my life coach's response would be, of course it's not normal. Normal, the benchmark for normal is not being able to communicate in our society.
Oh my goodness, it's so true. Because I'm always preaching communication, but like, you have to then also acknowledge it's really difficult, and it's like a lifetime worth of like practicing.
Yeah. And like, so one of the, I remember one of the times I said it, I talk about this in the book, where in my new book, and it's where my she basically said to set up a friend date with my housemate who I wasn't seeing and was missing a lot. And I was like, people don't do that. Like, you do that with your relationships, but like your romantic relationships, you don't go to your friend and like, hey, let's schedule in a date once a month so that we actually see each other. And I was like, that's not normal. You don't, that's not normal friendship. And my life coach was like, you're right, it's not normal. Do you want normal, or do you want better than normal? And I was like, okay, I guess I have to have that conversation then. But I was terrified, and I was really scared to do it, because I was like, is my best friend gonna just laugh in my face and be like, that's a ridiculous idea, I've never heard of that.
We can just say, it was my life coach's idea.
I was like, it wasn't my idea, I take no accountability.
Amazing. Well, you brought it up, you have got a new book coming out.
Yay! Thank you.
The Joy of Being Selfish. And I'm really curious to know how you feel about the word selfish, because I remember when I turned 20, I turned around and said to my mum, this is going to be my selfish decade. And she kind of judged me for that. She was like, no, no, it's really bad being selfish. So I wanted to know your thoughts on the word.
So the funny thing is, my mum only found out the title of my book about 2 weeks ago, like literally right before I announced it. And I don't know whether I'd done that consciously, but my mum's first reaction was like, why would you call a book that? And she was like, I don't want my daughter to promote being selfish. What does that say about me that I raised someone who wants to be selfish?
Bless our mum.
I know. And I was like, no, just wait until you read the book. But essentially, whenever someone sets a boundary, there are some really cliched responses, and I go through them in depth in the book, but like involving words like, you're selfish, you're unforgiving if you cut someone out, you're mean, you're being a bully, like all of these words are so stereotypical and so predictable that I almost wanted to reclaim it. But not only that, we talk about self-love all the time, but we don't recognize that in order to actually have time for self-love and self-care, you need to make time for yourself. And in order to do that, you do have to put yourself before other people. And so people can really get on board with a wafty idea of self-love. But I'm like, boundaries are the practical side of self-love. How do you have time for self-love and self-care when you're taking care of everyone else first? And if we look at like the opposite of selfish, that's selfless. And as much as like those people in society are really praised, I see it from a different point of view where I'm like...
No, that's a really good point, yeah.
Selfless people are not doing it because they are so whole and so good as a human. They're doing it because they're insecure and they aren't confident in their relationships. And therefore, they think the more they do for other people, the more they will be loved and be worthy. So it's actually coming from a place of insecurity. It's not coming from a place of like being selfless. And so you're almost being selfless... selfishly. And you'll know that if you've ever been around a person who like prides themselves on their selflessness, where like you're even trying to just order a takeaway and you're like, what do you want? And they're like, I don't mind. And you're like, just state your opinion. I won't be offended. Just say something, choose something.
What do you want?
Yeah. And so that's where the title comes from. But also, very conveniently, I have a 7-step process on how to set boundaries, and all the first letters happen to spell the word selfish. So it's called the selfish method.
I love it.
it's one of my like creative moments that I had, because I wrote it in the pandemic. It was like one of those moments where I was like, I'm a genius.
It's just wonderful when it all comes together like that.
Exactly. But I just think like boundaries are seen as so controversial, especially when I talk about them online, and I'm like, oh, but self-love isn't. How do you not think these two are connected?
Well, one of them's been commercialized.
Yeah, exactly. to turn into face masks and baths, bubble baths and whatnot. And I'm like, that has nothing to do with boundaries. That has nothing to do with self-love, but okay.
But they don't tell you how to make sure none of your family walk in on your precious bath time.
Exactly. Or how to cut people out of your phone book when, like delete numbers and delete... we don't have phone books anymore. But delete numbers and delete messages. Because that energy, and also having those people in your life, but also cut out humans in real life as well, that's going to affect your mental health way more than having a bubble bath once a week.
So true. Before we get into people's questions from Instagram, which go deep into boundary stuff, I just wanted to ask you, what is a life coach? Because you keep talking about your life coach, and also you are a life coach.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to ask about them.
So a life coach is essentially, I'm still not great at explaining it. Essentially, so I originally wanted to be a psychologist, and like that's traditional psychology. So psychologists, psychotherapists, all of that, that's traditional psychology. And I just found when I was getting towards the end of my degree that the point of view didn't align with the way I see things and how I believe the mind works. And therefore life coaching is almost like a more holistic side of personal development. I believe the difference is, although it can get blurry because some psychologists are very, it depends on the model essentially, but the thing with life coaching that tends to be the main theme is that it's more future focused, and traditional psychology is more past focused. So a psychologist will ask, what is wrong with you? And a life coach will ask, what do you want to be different, or like what do you want in your future? And that's where my mindset is. And also, I don't believe anything is a problem unless it's obstructing you from the future you or the future that you want. Whereas like a psychologist will go into your childhood and your past, which I do if it comes up and it's obstructing your life.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Thank you for clarifying. That's kind of like how I see the difference between like sex therapy and sex coach as well. So like sex therapy is the looking back, and the sex coaching is like, what is your ideal sex life? Let's work towards that.
Yeah. And I think the difficulty is, and why it's so hard to define, is because like life coaching doesn't have a monitoring body. Traditional psychologists have the British Psychological Society, the BPS. And so you have to get accredited in certain ways, whereas like life coaches don't have to. And therefore I'm 5 board accredited, but not every life coach has any accreditations or any qualifications. And I'm trained in something called neuro-linguistic programming, timeline therapy, and NLP coaching and hypnotherapy. I have a few other ones. Anyway.
NLP, the neuro-linguistic programming. Yeah. I feel like I've heard about that through the game, like through pickup artists?
Yes.
Is that the same
and
thing?
When you train in it, you start to meet a lot of pickup artists. And it is the funniest thing at first. And then, like, I don't know, I had such mixed feelings at first, but like, basically, rewind to 5 years ago when I first got qualified, I found it so weird that every single person, because I wasn't using the term life coach, I was saying like I was an NLP therapist, and every guy I spoke to knew what I was talking about and every girl didn't, and I was like, why is this? And then I, like, one of my guy friends, it was actually a guy I used to date, he was like, what do you do now? And he was like, oh, you're trained in NLP. And then he mentioned the game, and I was like, is this how every guy I'm speaking to knows what, like, what I'm trained in? And so it was a very interesting conversation where he basically said, oh, but don't worry, I didn't use it on you. And then I was like, bullshit, you so did. And also he taught me some of his techniques where, one, I've not been, I don't know whether this is interesting, but I found this fascinating.
No, go for it.
Where, he basically, and so we all, like, how I met this guy and how we were all in Bristol University and we were going out to clubs, and you would get with guys sometimes in a very loud club where you haven't asked each other your names and whatnot. But at the end of the night, like, you tend to walk out of the club together and then they ask for your number, right? And he would then go, so he'd be like, oh, can I have your number? Actually, wait, hold on. What's my name? Knowing that he never told her his name. And then she'd be like, oh, I'm so sorry, I forgot. And he'd be like, never mind, I don't want it anymore. And he walks away. And so,
oh, no, I hate it.
And then, I know, it's like, when I first learned about this, I was like, it's so sickening though, because like, I could tell why it works, especially from a psychology perspective. And she chases after him. And so in his words, he was like, the power dynamic has shifted. And also in her memory, she actually asked for my number.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, it's terrifying. Yeah. I read the game and I didn't.
But to put a positive thing, just to clarify though, NLP essentially, how pickup artists use it is to implant insecurities in people. Obviously, as a therapist, I'm doing the opposite. I'm using the same techniques to remove insecurities. And actually, a lot of the conversations I would have with these people, because I was just curious how you get into that life path and also how you can do that, like, consciously and ethically with a clear conscience. The main thing they would say is like, you don't think women are doing this to us? Like, and they would also say like, well, there were a lot of them who basically said there are playgirls. They used to call them like, you know how they were like playboys, but they would call them playgirls. And he was like, there are playgirls who do the exact same thing. And I was like, yeah, but they're not the people you're using it on. You're using it on the most insecure. And that's because those techniques only work on the insecure people. And so to pretend that you're doing it on the people who are playing the same game as you is not accurate at all.
Yeah, you tell them. You tell them. Okay, I've got some questions from Instagram. We can fire through these.
Cool.
Somebody asked, is there such a thing as too many boundaries?
No, but there is such a thing as you are putting up walls instead of boundaries. So walls block out everyone. It's like a shut door, a shut house. All the windows are like blocked up. A boundary is you live inside your house, but you can open the door and you can open the window. Boundaries allow for intimacy in a safe way, whereas walls are blocking off everyone because you don't want to make yourself vulnerable.
Okay. So walls, not great, but have as many boundaries as you like.
Yeah.
Love it. Somebody asked how to be there for your partner without being overwhelmed by their trauma on top of your own issues.
Boundary is a simple way. So you always want to be supporting your partner. You don't want to be caretaking your partner. So you want to support them while they have their emotions. Do not onboard their emotions as your own.
Simple as that. I guess people will have to get your book to like dive deeper into these things and get the help.
Oh yeah, we can go deeper. I mean, there's a lot within that question, for example. Yeah. Like, it was more so because you were like quickfire, so I was like, okay, I'll be quick.
I love quickfire because we do have, there's a few more questions. When is the book out, by the way, so people know and they can pre-order it now?
4th of February, and yeah, pre-order now.
Ooh, just ready for Valentine's.
Exactly, that was not done on purpose. Well, it actually totally was.
it always is on purpose.
Yeah, everything is on purpose.
So somebody asked, what if your partner disagrees with some boundaries and doesn't want to have that kind of chat?
Well, so that's two questions, really, because what if someone disagrees with your boundaries? Then you set your boundaries, they set theirs, you have a conversation, you compromise, you come up with a solution that suits both of yours. If they don't want to have a conversation about it, then that's a whole nother set of issues. And what I have found in the last, like, because I've had boundaries in my own life for about 5-6 years, and it's been a learning curve. And what I discovered is that sometimes the setting of the boundary actually gives you way more information about your relationship than the actual problem did. So how someone responds to a boundary gives you that information to be like, you're not even going to have a conversation with this about this with me, then that's telling me more about this relationship. And what's the harm in a conversation unless you think it's going to end the relationship, which means like, it's actually counterintuitive. Like if you actually can talk about things, I think you can solve really big problems, but you also create really big problems if you can't communicate.
Yeah, no, 100%. Stuff still comes up for me and Dan like all the time, where every so often one of us is just like, okay, this thing's been building up, let's have a chat and see what we can.
But actually, I think I saw one of your YouTube videos where it's funny because I have a section in my book about it, but it's also, I saw it in one of your YouTube videos after I'd written it, and I was like, this is spooky, where you do a, like, I don't know whether you said you did it weekly or monthly, but you do a check-in with each other.
Yeah, so I don't think we've done one for a while, but we do kind of joke about it. But yeah, like in the first couple years of dating, we would do like a yearly check-in, but it was just always quite jokey. So it felt very accessible and it didn't feel very scary, because whilst what we were communicating about and the content was really important, the way that we packaged it up felt very non-threatening. So we could be like, so how's this last year been for you? Is there anything that you would like to improve? What highlights have there been, you know?
But it's such good communication. And I know, like, to some people listening, they might be like, that's so unconventional, almost in the same way that I said, like, that I had a friend date. Like, oh, that's unconventional. Yes, it's unconventional, but it's so healthy and so good. And in the same way that when I set boundaries with, like, I set boundaries with, like, very casual relationships as well. Like, I'll set boundaries with a guy, like, I mean, for an example, a guy was coming over, like, very, like, friends with benefits kind of relationship, and he wouldn't give me a time he was coming over, and I was like, no, that doesn't work for me, like, tell me a time, otherwise I'm making other plans. And he replied being like, all right, Miss Sassy, 3 p.m. it is. And I was like, how odd is it that suddenly you didn't know your schedule 2 minutes ago and now you suddenly do? Yeah. But it's not the fact he didn't know his schedule. It was that, like, me setting a boundary was like, I'm not going to tolerate that behavior, meant that he changed his behavior. And like all of these things, everyone's like, oh, well, it's not conventional, you can't set boundaries with all of these rules about how we should have our relationships. Yeah. It doesn't work that way. And
no, and also that didn't sound awkward, like that exchange between the two.
But also in the same way, so there was a big controversy around boundaries, I think earlier this year, where someone had done this Twitter thread about boundaries, and there was so much backlash because they'd done it in a very formal way. And so there were a lot of like memes being done. I don't know whether you saw it around, like, oh, your mum died, I'll respond to you in 3 to 5 working days, and like was very much like a LinkedIn automatic response kind of thing. And I was like, do you know how casually I set boundaries with friends sometimes? Like, sometimes, I mean, 5 years in, I sometimes literally just say the word boundaries. If they keep pushing something and they won't drop it, I'm like, boundaries. And then they're like, okay, yeah. But like, it gets to a point where especially when you're familiar with someone, you can do it really casually. It doesn't have to be a serious conversation. You can laugh while you're doing it. And it's once you're in the practice of it, you can understand how it can be so casual. At the beginning, it seems like this really daunting task because you think you have to like follow all the steps. And even in the book, I said the seven steps things, but like even at the end, I'm like, this is not how you will continue to set boundaries. This is like giving you a guidepost for the beginning of you setting boundaries. But like, now it's very casual. Like with one of my best friends, she was moaning about an ex who she'd broken up with like four times, and I didn't have the capacity for it. I was literally like, I'm not having the same conversation for the fourth time. And so I didn't say that. What I said was, I don't have the emotional capacity for this shit. Like, just said that off. And like, then the funny thing was, this whole controversy about this Twitter thread came out a week later. And I said to her, like, was it really harsh when I sent that? And she was like, no, it's more human than what this Twitter thread is. Because at least that was like, that is how you speak though. So like, I was like, yeah, you're right. You have her listen to the same conversation four times. Like, so I just dropped it. And she was like, I don't think you would reply in the same way if my mum had died. Like, and I was like, of course I wouldn't. Cause like, boundaries require common sense. Yeah. Like, yeah, exactly. But it does get to a point where it's very casually done, and it doesn't need to be this big, or even long conversation, like how the example with the friends with benefits, it was literally like two sentences, but it was a firm boundary.
Yeah, I like that. And someone came round.
Yeah, exactly. And also, but like, let's look at the opposite situation. If I hadn't had said that, which when I was 18 years old, I wouldn't have, because I would have been like, I want to be liked. I don't want them to think I'm being annoying. I want to be the easygoing, free, carefree person that like every guy advertises for on dating apps. And so I would be like, yeah, no problem. I'm chill. Don't worry about it. And what I would have done was sat around the whole next day in resentment, being like, you're wasting my time. And let's say he didn't actually end up turning up. I would have been like, I've sat in the entire day waiting for you. But then who actually is in the wrong here? Me, because I didn't set my boundaries, or like, because he told me he was going to let me know, but I let him waste my time.
Yeah. And that kind of comes back to your empowered dating thing as well. Because like in one of those situations, you get like what you want and it feels great. And the other, you're
just feeling like shit. I actually think like, his respect for me went up because this was a guy who like, this was the guy at the beginning who like, we ended up seeing each other for a bit, but like the guy at the beginning who I hadn't spoken to in 2 years. And when he came over, he actually said like, you're quite different to how you are 2 years ago. And I was like, what do you mean? And he was like, I mean, I could turn up whenever I wanted to 2 years ago. But it was also like, I felt so proud of myself, but then I also felt like, oh, and you knew it, like you knew you could mess me around, like and once you have that moment where you're like, oh, I thought I was just like subtly being easygoing and carefree. No, the other party know what you're doing. They know that you're so desperate to be liked that like they will just use that to their advantage. And to be honest, I've got to the point in my life where I'm like, who can blame them? Because like, now that I have boundaries, I'm like, well, if you're going to do everything for me and make my life really easy, then why would I not jump on board?
Yeah, exactly. Somebody asked, and I think this is a good one for all of us, how do I start to figure out what my boundaries should be?
Ask yourself what you actually want. Or if like an easier way is to ask yourself what you don't want. Because a lot of the times they're like, I don't know what I want. And I'm like, no, but you know what you don't want. And you also know when you're being treated badly. And that's where you start setting the boundaries. So the very simplest boundary, I didn't even explain what boundaries are. So boundaries are the difference between me and you. It's the separation between us. It's the fence in our backyard. You don't put the fence up because you hate the other person. You put the fence up to protect your land. And it's the same thing. And so it's how you want to be treated. And it's also to make sure that we are two separate individuals, especially in a relationship, two separate like identities and individuals. Because so for example, a couple who don't have that are those couples where like you tell one partner so you tell your best friend something and they tell their partner that thing you've told them in confidence because they don't have secrets. And it's like, no, you don't have boundaries. So anyone who's like, oh, I don't know how to set boundaries, I don't know where to start, I'm always like, the first boundary you learn is the word no. Start using it when you mean the word no. Start saying yes when you mean yes and no when you mean no, because people with good boundaries mean what they say and say what they mean. And that's essentially where you start. And I don't buy it that you don't know when you feel bad when someone says something bad to you, because it's inside your body. You can feel it. You do know that. Yeah. So even if your first step is simply going, don't speak to me like that, that is a boundary. So you can start saying that. And like, once you tune into your body more and you realize when anger arises, anger and resentment are the two biggest warning signs that you have a boundary that's been crossed and you need to say something about it. So rather than questioning your anger or questioning, oh, do I have a right to this anger? Maybe I'm overreacting, all of that. Instead go, oh, my boundary is being crossed.
Yeah. Oh my God. That's so true. The anger and resentment ones for me are personally when I start to notice that those are things that I'm feeling, that's when I'm like, oh, okay, some boundary's being crossed, or I have a new boundary that I didn't realize existed and I need to tell someone about it.
It's a really important point. Your boundaries can change and we change them all the time. Mm-hmm. I used to have a boundary where I don't talk about my love life or dating life online at all, which I changed that boundary. And to be honest, the only reason I changed that boundary was because I was frustrated at the lack of positive dating and positive single stories there were in the media. And I wanted to be part of the single group that changed that. So that's why I changed my boundary, because I was like, I want to change this. And so my privacy, but how much I discuss it definitely changed. My online boundaries changed.
That's another really huge piece, is that it's not just your personal boundaries between you and like friends, partners, who are family, but like with social media, social media is a separate entity that you also need to have boundaries.
But also, you're a really good example of like love life and online boundaries, where for a long time you didn't share Dan at all, and then you didn't share his name for ages, but you would talk about your boyfriend. Those are all different boundaries, and that was to your comfort level and you changing it. I don't know whether you ever got any backlash around when you started being more open about it, but
No, I think it was so gradual, because it was all just like really incremental with what I was comfortable with and what Dan was comfortable with. And so it was just really slow of us just kind of like pushing them as we felt comfortable.
But it's a great example of not only healthy like love life boundaries, because it was also respecting Dan, but also healthy online boundaries, which frankly I don't see a lot of in influencers, which is why I noticed it.
It also comes down to like, sometimes I think, oh God, I wouldn't do that. And just because I wouldn't do that doesn't necessarily mean it's unhealthy boundary setting for that person.
Oh yeah. So this,
I do get a bit like, oh my God, I can never imagine myself doing that.
So this happened where I went away to Devon with my best friend, and I went on her phone to change her dating app, and I put it on my stories, and a lot of like my following was like, isn't that bad boundaries? You're going on her phone without her permission. You're changing her dating app without her permission. And I was like, you can't tell me what my boundaries with my best friend are. Me and my best friend go on our phones, like each other's phones, all the time. If she had an issue with it, she would have told me the first time I did it. But like, the reason why we both have each other's passwords means like we're fine with that with each other. Yeah. But also, it doesn't mean now everyone is allowed on my phone, because if a boyfriend did that, I don't think I'd appreciate it. And I would tell them the first time they did that. But like, you can't decide for me. There's no such thing as going on someone's phone is a bad boundary. No, it's specific to the person. It's specific to the context. It's specific to the person whose phone it is, what is allowed. Whereas like, my dad's very protective of his phone. My mum is not. My mum could not care less. Like, things like that, where it's different for each person. So we have to recognise that you can't decide someone's boundaries for them.
So true. Well, Michelle, I think we're going to leave it there. Thank you so, so much for chatting with me. Always so insightful.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Where can people find you online, and where can people find your new book?
I am Scarred Not Scared on Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, Yeah, I think that's it. And you can find my new book on Amazon or Waterstones or pretty much everywhere that sells books. There is, I think there should be a audiobook available. There's an ebook available. So yeah, thank you so much for having me on. I had such a great time.
Oh, me too. Thank you so much. And thank you all for listening. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to Doing It. If you enjoyed it, I would really appreciate it if you left a rating and a review. You can find show notes at doingitpodcast.co.uk and do go follow us on social media, and I'll catch you in the next episode. Bye. This was a Global Original podcast.